Welcome to the WWE Podcast, your place for the most passionate wrestling analysis on the web.
Just turn Roman heel. What is WWE waiting for?
When other wrestling podcasts put you to sleep, you can count on the WWE Podcast to keep you engaged and asking for more.
I've been watching wrestling for over 20 years, and that was one of the best matches I've ever seen.
If you're easily offended, this may not be the show for you.
Whatever happened to the men being able to physically retaliate against the women in WWE? This is a fantasy environment.
This is unlike any other wrestling analysis. So without any further delay, let's get the show started right now.
This is the WWE Podcast on this Wednesday, May 8th, 2019. Wednesday, right. If you guys follow my show, this is a day earlier than normal. So you're welcome, I think. So, guys, thank you very much for joining me, and this is the WWE Podcast. By the way, I don't know if I've ever mentioned this. I probably should for legal reasons. I am not officially affiliated with WWE in any capacity. Okay, I just want to put that out there. I am not employed by WWE. I'm not sponsored by WWE. I have zero affiliation in any matter with WWE. So there's my disclaimer and legalese for those of you who think I am somehow attached to WWE itself. This is an independent podcast done by a wrestling fan who loves WWE and happened to name it as such. So there you have it. So guys, tons and tons to talk about this week in wrestling, and we're going to get to that. But first, you'll notice I'm by myself, my lonesome right now, and had a mix-up with a co-host. But no fear. Things have been rescheduled, and we will have co-hosts on a regular basis very, very soon. Very soon. I promise you that. And I'm looking forward to it. It's going to be great to have more people on the show and discuss wrestling other than just my view. I learned so much from everybody else and not just staying inside my own head, which can be a very scary place to be, not just in wrestling thought, but in many other thoughts that I have in my mind. So one last little bit of housekeeping, and then I'm going to get right into the just craziness that was this week in WWE with the wild card stipulation being added. Is we have now officially crossed the 100,000 download mark. So thank you to everybody who's listened to this show, past, present, future. I guess if you haven't listened to the future, I guess I'm pre-thanking you, but I want to really thank you guys for making this show such a success. And I think this is, and I really believe this is just the beginning of this show. I think that this show has a lot of potential outside of just myself. As I said, bringing in the co-hosts will be a big deal. Adding new segments, I've got a lot of suggestions other than just recapping Raw and doing my What If segments and my wrestling nostalgia segments. I've gotten suggestions to do top fives, you know, top five matches of WrestleMania, top five heel turns, that kind of stuff. And I think that's a very interesting notion, and it'll change things up from the normal format. I know that you guys want more shows. As I said, it's very difficult in my lifestyle right now to do more shows. I would love to. It's something that I'm looking to somehow squeeze in one more show every week. So I do three shows a week. It is something I'm absolutely looking to do because I love being able to get on here and discuss wrestling with all of you. It is my escape for the week. So if I can escape three times a week, hey, even better than two. So it's something on the table, as I mentioned too. I know that my website, WWEpodcast.com, is outdated for sure, to say the least. And I'm looking into that as well. If you go there, it's there. I own the domain. It's an outdated site that I haven't posted on in about 2 years, but it's there. And the problem just is time. It's just, when you become a dad, time is something that is very fleeting, even more than you would think it would be. Free time is something that is almost impossible to come by. And when I have my free time, it's either working out or doing this show. And so I split my time between those two things. And, you know, if I were to just stop working out and do this show more, well, that'd be great, but then I'd feel like crap. So it's a very fine balancing act. Obviously, I do a full-time job as well and another part-time job. It's very, very, I'm very limited on time. So I just wanted to point that out to you guys because I think it's important to let you guys know exactly what's going on and why you're not seeing more shows. But with the time I do have, as I said, I'm bringing on more co-hosts. I'm going to have new voices. and then eventually land on a selection that I think fits this show and something and someone that I think has good chemistry with myself. I think that's important. And somebody that doesn't always agree with me, I think, is important too. I think that it gets boring when you have co-hosts who constantly agree on things. Because why bother, right? Because if you have the same perspective and same outlook and same analysis, well, why even have two? You know, there's that back and forth banter, the debates, that kind of stuff that I think not all the time. I mean, you can agree on some things, but I think when you add that element into the chemistry of co-hosts, it's just a much more listenable experience. All right. So let's get right to Monday Night Raw. And Vince McMahon opens the show, and it's interesting that when ratings plummet, that the McMahons always look to themselves to spike the ratings. And yeah, Vince McMahon implemented this wild card stipulation on both Raw and SmackDown. But hasn't that really been happening almost since the brand split itself? I mean, seriously, because when you think about this, WWE can't ever help themselves and stay with a clean break of brands. Ever. Ever. And it just seems to break down the further away from the brand split that you get. It tends to break down. You have people inexplicably showing up on both brands that don't belong there, whether it's announcers, wrestlers, referees. If it's such a tight brand split and there's such a rivalry, because only SmackDown fans go to SmackDown and only Raw fans go to Raw. I mean, the notion and thought of that is just preposterous. However, the point I'm making is that Vince McMahon is essentially just naming a wildcard stipulation that has already been in existence prior to the announcement. Maybe not in such a full form that Vince McMahon announced it in and saying there can only be four. Originally three, but Lars Sullivan pushed everything to four. Because he gave Vince McMahon a mean face. I mean, if you think Vince McMahon is supposed to be intimidated at this point in his career, in his life, after dealing with every performer under the sun, that he's going to be intimidated by Lars Sullivan, who walks into his makeshift office and just stares him down? Suddenly it's four? I mean, I know they're trying to put the guy over, but come on, it's Vince McMahon. It's Vince McMahon. So it's four wrestlers that can go from Raw to SmackDown or SmackDown to Raw. And the whole idea of this is to make both shows feel unpredictable. And many people are feeling that this is 100% knee-jerk reaction to the tanking ratings on both shows. And I think that's in part true, but reports have been coming out that it's not just because of the poor ratings. It's also due to the fact that Fox is coming in the fall. And they want a compelling product. They want, obviously, the highest ratings possible and the most unpredictable show possible. They want the best product possible, period. I mean, that's ultimately what it gets boiled down to. And you're going to get that by having the top stars on both brands. And I understand that. So while my initial thought and reaction was, oh, my God, look at this nonsense that they're just – it's like they're throwing everything at the wall and seeing what sticks. Air everything. Have everything. And it's like, okay, well, what's next week? I mean, and furthermore, we didn't get clarification on how and who determines the four people that can drift between their brand and the rival brand. I hate to even call it the rival brand. It's really the sister brand because there's no rivalry. I'm sorry, there's no rivalry. And so I don't know how that's determined. How and who determines who goes? What if you have just people, you know, the wrestlers sitting in the hotel room going, you know what? I'm going to go to Monday Night Raw next week. I'm going to Raw next week. And are they supposed to notify management? And the first four, is it first come, first serve? Is it just only if you're in the top portion of the roster and are main eventing the shows that you're allowed to move? How does this work? I don't know. And it's just... The logistics of it, maybe I'm not supposed to. Oh, I'm thinking too much about it. I don't think I'm thinking too much about it to want to know how these four individuals are going to drift back and forth. And what if one of them wins a championship while they're there? How does that play into, are they still going to stay on their home brand? Do they move to the brand that they want it on. I mean, there's so many things that I don't think are thought out right now, but maybe they'll get ironed out as time goes on and we get more answers and situations like this pop up. So again, Vince McMahon, very proud of himself. I mean, it was done to get a reaction of heel heat saying, oh, I'm such a genius. And Vince McMahon does not seem like himself. Vince McMahon seems like he's out of it 50 to 60% of the time. When he's speaking, I don't know, maybe I'm used to the Vince McMahon of the 90s and mid and early 2000s. I think maybe that's what it is. I just see Vince McMahon and it's like he's not engaged in what he's saying. He stumbles on words. That's not Vince McMahon. He is just kind of got a glazed look half the time. Lost. He seems lost in his mind or where he is. It's not the focused Vince McMahon, the sharp Vince McMahon that we once knew. And we're all a slave to time. And maybe Father Time has finally caught up to Vincent Kennedy McMahon. And I think that could very well be part of that. And I think the other part is, well, he has a hell of a lot of other things that he's doing beyond just the WWE television product. Namely, the XFL that is debuting next year as well. So there's a lot happening. And if you think for one second that WWE isn't just a tick nervous about AEW, they'll never, ever publicly admit it, ever. But if they're not, they're fools. Because I'm not saying AEW is going to put WWE out of business. That's almost never going to happen and probably will never happen. That's not the point. The point is that they should be concerned that viewership will drop for WWE and spike for AEW, creating true competition for WWE, taking the stars that they underutilized or suffocated and letting them breathe on a brand a brand of wrestling that promotes and encourages creativeness, creative freedom among wrestlers. The pay has apparently equal to, or sometimes in some cases, better than what they were getting at WWE. When you look at Jon Moxley, who is rumored to be migrating over to AEW, his creative noggin is going to be lit up when he gets to AEW and not being suffocated by writers who tell him how he should act. So I think that's going to be an attractive place for wrestlers who, I mean, let's face it, are frustrated by the creative and things changing by the moment and no true direction, no long-term booking. And they feel like they have no say almost in how they want to be portrayed or what they want to say in their promos. So when you give wrestlers that freedom and go back to basics of letting them be who they are with the volume turned up to 10, it's going to come across more natural. It's going to engage you naturally because it's coming across more organically. So as a human being, we can detect BS. And when BS is not present, guess what? We get lost in the moment. We're engaged in the product and we care about the performers that are on our screens. So WWE should be a bit concerned, not shaking their boots that, again, they're not going to be put out of business, but it's going to be a very viable alternative for fans to view and watch on a weekly basis. And so I just wanted to mention that too. So as Vince McMahon continues to stumble, fumble, and bumble, you have AEW over there who is just plotting and looking to redefine what professional wrestling is in 2019. And I think they have a hell of a roster to start. Obviously, the top names, Kenny Omega. You have the Young Bucks. Obviously, Cody Rhodes. You have Chris Jericho. You have Jim Ross. I mean, yeah, you could say, oh, they're the WWE leftovers. But they still have gas left in the tank. They don't want to be viewed as TNA, where they just take all of the signees that didn't get re-signed or got released by their parent company and then taking them in and letting them be on the brand and get a title shot, just basically redefining who they are or just a watered-down version of what they were. They don't want to be that. They don't want to be that wasteland for forgotten stars of yesteryear. They will have those older stars, But that's not going to be their focus. Their focus is going to be on younger talent, utilizing the older talent like Jim Ross's voice, who is he has some of the most iconic moments in history attached to his voice in wrestling lore, and using that name recognition and brand awareness that people know, like Kenny Omega, Chris Jericho, and Jim Ross, and using that to grab new viewers who may not otherwise take a second look at this new presentation of pro wrestling. It's a chance for wrestling to be redefined. We all think of professional wrestling as Vince McMahon's version of wrestling. I think that's just, especially if you're a WWE fan, as I am. I was exclusive WWE. I never really watched WCW. I thought WWE during the Monday Night Wars was a superior product. And I think I was right, considering the fact that WWE bought WCW in 2001. Now, this again is the chance for AEW to redefine what wrestling is. And as I just said, we all, as WWE exclusive fans, just view wrestling as Vince McMahon's presentation, ideology, and thought and representation of what wrestling should be. It shouldn't be wrestling. It's sports entertainment, damn it. I want to see wrestling. I don't need to see Usos and Revival and Zack Ryder and his partner as tag team champions, Zack Ryder and Curt Hawkins in some terrible comedic segment. That's not what I want. And I think that the live audience will tell you that. Outside of Vince McMahon backstage slapping his knees and laughing, I don't know who else is laughing at this crap. I'm serious. It's the comedic mind and part of Vince McMahon's brain that lives and shows itself on WWE programming is some of the worst programming you'll ever see. Vince McMahon is a genius. There's no question about that. And he calls himself a genius. You know what? He is. But not when it comes to comedy. Very, very rarely does Vince McMahon hit comedy on the head and knock it out of the park. Admittedly, comedy is hard to begin with. It's a tough bill to fill. It is a very difficult field to get into and be successful in. Even more difficult to be successful in that field when you're not an expert in that field, but try to be. And try to be something you're not. And I think Vince McMahon tries that on a weekly basis and ultimately fails. And I don't know who is giving him the nod to go ahead with these things in the boardroom, at the creative production meetings that they have over the phone or in person, whatever, and say, Vince, that'll be great. I love it. Oh, the audience will love it. And every time, almost every time, it's dead silence or groaning or eye rolling. I don't know where Vince McMahon gets his humor. I told you this before. I'll say it again. I think Vince McMahon's part of his brain that developed the humor froze at age 14. He has the humor of a 14-year-old boy. And I mean that. I mean that. Finding it funny that he throws, pushes people in pools when they have their wallets and their cell phones on them. His humor is just so juvenile. And maybe that is to be expected, considering he grew up in the business and grew up with a lot of pranksters and hazing and all of that. And it just kind of stuck with him. And as he matured, he didn't grow with his humor. He grew in his business acumen and every other area except his humor. It is just a terrible presentation on television when it comes to the humor version of wrestling. It's very difficult to do, even worse when you have a 14-year-old mind at the helm and behind those segments. So, wow, getting back to Monday Night Raw, I went way off there, but I think it was well worth the explanation. We have Vince, who's implementing this wild card to make things feel unexpected. Anything could happen. I mean, that's ultimately what Vince McMahon always wants. Is Monday Night Raw. It's raw. It's uncut. Nobody knows what's going to happen. Well, Raw hasn't felt like that in years and years and years and years and years and years. Almost since the Attitude Era has Raw felt not predictable. And I think that ultimately takes away from Raw viewership. Tanking is one way to represent that flaw. And you know, you have this show that just always feels like it's structured in a way that's not predictable, or that is too predictable. Not so much the outcomes of the matches. Sometimes those can be unpredictable. That's not what I'm saying. What makes it feel so predictable is the structure. You know when a promo is going to end. You know when a person is going to be interrupted. You know when they're going to commercial break. My God, you know when they're going to commercial break. I can call it 10 seconds before it happens. It's unbelievable. You know when somebody goes to the outside of the ring, Michael Cole is going to say, "Can Sami Zayn get back in this as Raw rolls on?" I'm serious. You know somebody is going to come out every week and welcome us to Monday Night Raw. It's the first line that they say, regardless of what's happening. It just, there are things that just, there are constants that don't need to be constants. It makes it feel just so like, okay, well, nothing's going to happen here. They're going to commercial in about 10 seconds. The match will end, you know, on a DQ. There are certain things. And again, it's not necessarily the individual matches that are the problem, although those can be problematic in and of themselves too. It's just the entire show, the production, maybe that's a better word, the production of wrestling for SmackDown and Raw it's too predictable when it comes to that. That's what needs to change. And if Vince McMahon thinks that this is the problem, that, oh, there's not enough stars on both shows, it needs to feel more unpredictable. If he thinks that's the problem, that's an even bigger problem. Because if he can't identify the root cause of tanking ratings and identify the root cause of people who are leaving this television show in droves, that it's not about, oh, we need more stars on Raw and SmackDown, that it's maybe more of your presentation of what professional wrestling is, maybe that's the problem. Maybe that's the problem. So I don't think it's a terrible thing. Again, I think the wild card is, I mean, it's interesting. I mean, every week you're going to go, all right, who's coming to Raw that's on SmackDown and who's coming to SmackDown that's on Raw? Ultimately, I think that's what's going to happen, and it'll be okay, great. But the problem with doing this, while it'll spike ratings minusculely, if that's a word, and I think it will increase ratings to a very small degree on a week-to-week basis, I don't think enough to make up for the fact that by doing this, WWE is giving away a lot of matches that they could have saved in the bank and keeping people apart that need to be kept apart to make it feel special when they do have a match together, whether it be at Rumble Mania, Survivor Series, or SummerSlam. And by bringing everybody together in the same world, that's the drawback. And that was the drawback of having a non-brand split show, is the fact that you have to keep these individuals on the same show and not have them cross paths. Whereas if you have separate worlds, separate brands, and a clean break, which WWE just cannot do, it would make things feel so much more special and more of the moments that WWE likes to give fans. When you have two wrestlers who haven't seen each other in a year or more come together and cross paths, and that's what would make it feel more special. So taking the top stars, whoever those four may be every week from one show to the next, cool, but man, they are burning through the matchups that they have. They are burning through matchups that I was hoping they would save for down the line at pay-per-views that are deserving. I mean, you have Seth Rollins and AJ Styles, who I think should have been deserving of not Money in the Bank, more of a SummerSlam. You could have built that match to SummerSlam. You really could have. So anyway, let's move on. We had AJ Styles accidentally hit Seth Rollins with the Phenomenal Forearm. It looked like it was on accident or by accident. I don't know why people say on accident. It's by accident. Oh, a little pet peeve of mine. So he hit him with the Phenomenal Forearm. Seth ends up losing the match, and it just creates tension between the two foes who are forced to be partners. Fine. I don't have much to say about this match. I mean, it's kind of refreshing to not see Leo Rush with Bobby Lashley, by the way. And I know that Leo Rush has had a ton of heat on him for basically feeling he's bigger than he should be. In how long he's been on the main roster, he feels he deserves more. Apparently, he was offered a $300,000 contract. He believed he deserved $600,000. He is growing a terrible reputation backstage, and I don't think we will see Leo Rush on the main roster anytime soon. And Baron Corbin. So this guy gets a lot of flack, and I think that Baron Corbin is one of those guys that he has the go-away heat, but also at the same time has the heat that makes you want to see him get his ass kicked. That's the heat. That's the good heat. That's the heat you want. You don't want the go-away heat, because even if you get your ass kicked, it's like, well, we know we're going to see you try to retaliate, which means we have to see you again, which means it's not worth it. So I think the I want to see you get your ass kicked heat is more marketable and monetizable, I'm making up words today, than it is for go-away heat. So I think Corbin has both of them right now, and I hope that he continues to move towards I hope you get your ass kicked. I want to see you get your ass kicked. I will pay to see you get your ass kicked, because that's where the money is, type of heat, rather than, oh my God, this guy's still on our TV screen. And I still feel like he's the general manager of Raw. And then I go, oh, no, he's not. He's not. He's not. I have to remind myself, because he comes out in that, you know, that prom vest thing that he has, that, like, you know, you take off your jacket at prom and you still got the vest on. It looks like he's wearing that. So Miz is shown backstage after that looking for Shane. And there's more on that later too. Sami Zayn comes out and gets on the mic and trashes the fans again. And Sami Zayn is, look, I think he's doing a very good job on the mic. I feel like he's not being scripted, although at the same time, you know who he is. He is the conduit for Vince McMahon and management that they are using to tell the fans that basically to F off for the criticism that they're getting. They are using Sami Zayn as a conduit to respond to the critics of WWE. That's exactly what he is. So now that Braun Strowman is getting involved in this, I don't know where this ends. I hope it doesn't end with Sami Zayn just getting flattened by Braun Strowman, who has cooled off an insane amount since this time last year, when you think about where he was. And it's a shame right now. The problem, I think, that with Braun Strowman is that they made him a one-trick pony. And that continued on Monday night when he threw Sami Zayn into a dumpster, and conveniently the garbage truck was right there, which, by the way, was already there. And if you watched the segment, was there the moment that Sami Zayn got tossed in. So the garbage man came up and dumped the dumpster into the back of the truck, and Sami Zayn apparently dies, because that's what would happen if you got crushed in the back of that truck. But not a scratch on him, not a scratch on him. But, so that's, they're just back to the one trick pony with Braun, and they never added another layer of dimension to his character. It was just, I'm a monster. You're going to get these heads. And outside of talking like a monster and a character, a wrestling character, he became kind of a one-trick pony, one-dimensional guy that talked really scary to scare kids. And that they just never did much beyond that. And I think that it's showing in the reactions he's getting. So I just hope that Sami Zayn is not the sacrificial lamb for trying to rebuild Braun Strowman. Moving on here, the Lucha House Party and the enhancement talent. Like, I have nothing really to say. I don't understand what a Lucha House Party is or why they have their own rules. I'm going to move on, because I don't want to be negative. So I'm going to move on. Robert Roode and Ricochet wins. He hit with the 630 splash. Fine with it. I think Ricochet has a very bright future in front of him. And that's one of the guys you want a bright spot? That's definitely a bright spot on Monday Night Raw, is Ricochet. And he's got the look. He's got Clearly, the acumen, the athletic ability goes without saying, and he has a presence about him. The only concern I have with him is longevity. You can't treat your body like that for long and have a long shelf life. On top of the fact that guys like that are doing a bit of damage to themselves by the way they sell, because they don't sell. There's no selling. There's no selling whatsoever. It's just about spots. And the things that they do are incredible. Look at the hang time. And then they're right back up. Right back up. As if nothing happened. There's no marks. There's no selling. There's no anguish. So how am I supposed to get invested in when it's just spot, 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 spot? I register, but I don't sell it. I register, but I don't sell it. Spot, spot, spot. Near fall finish. And then they get up. Nothing happens. Nothing next week. That's, I think, ultimately the problem with that style of wrestling that Ricochet is in. While it's amazing and fun to watch and he's an incredible athlete, that's the danger of that style of match. It doesn't engage you emotionally. It just goes, whoa. You go, wow, what a move. But you don't get invested in the story they're telling in the ring. That's the problem. So, but other than that, listen, I love Ricochet. The problem is he's a victim of the 2019 presentation of wrestling. I think that's the going to be the problem. Mysterio and his son Dominic are backstage, and Dominic runs into Samoa Joe. Samoa Joe, who I thought he was going to knock him down, punch him, put him in a sleeper or something, just basically told him to give a message back to his dad. Lacey Evans versus the Enhancement Talent, which I didn't catch her name, but they did announce the name. I just can't remember what it was. I told myself I was going to remember it. I didn't. But they at least announced the name. Lacey Evans hit her with the woman's right, which looked amazing in slow-mo. I love when they can do that and make it look good. Whew. Lacey Evans has my attention. As much as I was a little bit down on her character to begin with and coming out and just randomly interrupting and no matter who it was and not wrestling, she delivers the promo, her promos in very calm, cool, collected, able to absorb it at a very slow pace, but not annoyingly slow way. And she's solid in the ring. She has a military background, and her finisher is the female version of the WMD that Big Show had, the Weapon of Mass Destruction, except it's the woman's right, and she delivers it very well, loving it. And I like this feud with Becky Lynch more than I ever thought I would. And that's saying something, considering coming off WrestleMania, typically wrestlers go into programs with stars that aren't so exciting because it's the reset button and you build to the bigger stars at the end of the year or towards the middle of the year with SummerSlam, Survivor Series, Rumble, and then Mania. So to get that excited about or to get that engaged in a match right now, I think is something and a kudos to management and a kudos to Becky and to Lacey Evans. So. Okay, moving on here as we flip through the pages of Monday Night Raw, Viking Raiders and Hawkins and Ryder. I'm seriously not even going to mention that. The winners were just War Raiders, and I will leave it at that. The Firefly Funhouse with Bray Wyatt. People are trashing this, and I'm not seeing why. Oh, it's stupid. What's the end game? Bob, do people not see what's happening here? First of all, this is the most interesting thing Bray Wyatt has done in his entire career. Would you rather have him backstage with the Edison light bulb above his head speaking in riddles and then laughing maniacally and then losing the match, which is the formula that WWE used for the Bray Wyatt character for years? No, I'm loving this Firefly Funhouse. And number one reason why, I've said this last week, I'll say it again, is because Bray Wyatt is all in. He seems all in on this, and I'm loving it. The characters, the puppets on that are on the show are each representative of something in his past. Obviously, Mercy the Buzzard, follow the Buzzard. I forget the name of the witch, but the witch is Sister Abigail. The rabbit is a representative of all of us. And so I love it. I love it. And the Fireflies, who are the kids who just stared off into space, I look forward to it every week. And I love the music. I love the music. The music is... It gets stuck in my head, the little tune that they play before they go to Bray Wyatt. So I'm interested to see where this goes. You have my attention, and I think it could be something very interesting. As I said, and this is my prediction, and I'll stay with it. He's gonna. If you want to think, oh, how are they gonna translate this to live air? Easy. He's gonna come out like that, happy, probably to that music. He could even do an in-ring segment. someone's going to trigger him, and you'll see flashes of his darker character that he's trying to suppress and suppress and suppress until he finally snaps from something that happens, and the old Bray Wyatt comes out, but he continues to try to fight it. It's going to be fun to watch. Okay, Roman Reigns and Drew McIntyre as we get one of two WrestleMania rematches. Roman Reigns looks like he would have beaten Drew McIntyre, but Shane McMahon interferes, and I'm liking this as well. Which causes a DQ, obviously. I'm really enjoying Shane McMahon and Roman Reigns because for the first time in Roman Reigns' career, I'm rooting for Roman Reigns. As much as he says, I listen to the people now. Oh, do you? So you're not handed a script backstage. Stop it. Stop it, please. Stop trying to pander to us saying that if we cheer something that you want, you'll do it. Are you taking a survey every week? Are you listening to everybody that responds or mentions you on Twitter? Like, how are we the authority of you? So you are our slave. The wording was just terrible. I don't like when they pander that transparently, and that's what Roman Reigns' character did. So, all right, moving on. We had The Miz come out and make the save. And again, I'm liking this too. I like The Miz. Shane McMahon is getting involved in Roman Reigns and Miz's business. And I'm liking both of them because I think Shane is cast correctly. And that's what I liked. So let's see what else we had. Lars Sullivan, who just continues to destroy everything in his path. He beat up No Way Jose and the Rosebuds. I mean, his conga line, whatever the hell it was. And then Kofi Kingston and Daniel Bryan for the WWE Championship that was on the line. And WWE, again, they're giving away the WWE Championship rematch. Daniel Bryan comes out of nowhere but gets a nice pop. At the beginning of the show, by the way. But then quickly reestablishes himself as a heel, which I was happy for. Very good match between these two. As always, these two just have an amazing chemistry. I hope this is not the last time that we see them. Kofi Kingston wins clean. And we move on with our lives. And that was Raw. Quick, a couple notes on SmackDown. I'm shuffling through my notes here, folks. AJ Styles comes out and kicks off the show. He talks about the wild card rule. And Sami Zayn comes out and interrupts and says he doesn't want to be there on his day off, but someone has to call out AJ for his toxic ego spiraling out of control. AJ makes fun of Sami for getting thrown into a dumpster last night, and he smells and all that stuff. Eventually, it ends up saying Kofi says he'll defend it, defend his WWE Championship against either Styles or Kofi Kingston later that night. So, again, he never said that he would do a triple threat, and I'm trying to understand how it got into a triple threat, because during the commercial break, Kofi Kingston is booked in a triple threat match against AJ Styles and Sami Zayn for the WWE title. He said he would face either or, not both, but he got put in a triple threat. So, Andrade versus Ali, the match of last name fatalities. And what I mean by that is, if you guys remember... Actually, no, not last name, just I don't even know how to describe this. There's some kind of funny pun with this, but both men ended up having their names chopped up. It used to be Andrade Cien Almas, and it used to be Mustafa Ali. So Andrade lost his last name, and we have Ali losing his first name. So maybe it can be Mustafa Cien Almas if somebody wants to take what was... carved off of both men. I don't know. So, as expected, these two had, I was expecting this to go a long time, but it didn't. It didn't go more than a minute or two because Randy Orton hit the ring out of nowhere, ends up attacking both of them, and both of them get an RKO eventually after they put up a bit of a fight. But ultimately, Randy Orton stands tall with an RKO on both men. Shane McMahon announces Daniel Bryan and Rowan, another victim of name deletion. It used to be Eric Rowan. Comes out and awards them the tag team championships because they're deserving. And the Usos say that, hey, wait, whoa, 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 times 100, trying to be funny, I guess. And they come out and basically say, no, everything you get, you're supposed to earn, being the fighting champions that they were and being the upstanding guys. No, you have to earn these things. And Shane McMahon agrees to make a match between the two teams, and the winner will be the SmackDown Tag Team Champions. As if no other team wants a chance? Just the Usos, huh? All right. So, Rowan and Daniel Bryan win after. And what was most important in this match was, yes, Daniel Bryan was great. The Usos are always great. Eric Rowan, to me, was the standout because it was so much different from any other way he was booked in the past. And what I mean by that is he was able to kick out of a finisher of the Us, which is just basically a body splash. Does anybody have a counter for how many super kicks there were in that match? I mean, really, can we just tone it down a bit? They're cool to look at. They slap their knee at just the right time to make it look like they're hitting their opponent in the chin. All of that. It's not how it's executed. It's how many times it's executed because, number one, it's overused. And number two, when you think about the move, if you were to actually do that to somebody, you would break their teeth, break their jaw, especially if you do it more than once. It's that kind of stuff that's – and it just makes me think of Shawn Michaels rolling – oh, I was going to say rolling over in his grave, but he's not there yet. My God. But just cringing at, oh my God, are they really doing this? That was my finisher. And it put down guys three times their size, you know? So anyway, got to complain about something, right? I'm a wrestling fan. I have to complain. All right. Shane McMahon ends up presenting the titles to Bryan and Rowan after the match. And then we got another dose of the Bray Wyatt Firefly Funhouse. Shane McMahon stays at ringside and gets in the ring with a couple of Money in the Bank briefcases and says that basically tries to promote the Money in the Bank ladder match. Miz runs in and attacks Shane from behind, ends up chasing him up the ramp, and then the B team take out Miz, and the Miz retaliates but ends up getting distracted because Shane comes back out with a chair and lays out the Miz for payback. So I like this. Again, just like the Roman Reigns deal, I'm liking the feuds that he's having with these the wrestlers because I think it fits him well. And Shane McMahon as a heel is where it's at. Okay. So Paige comes out after the Mandy Rose and Sonya Deville win over Carmella and Ember Moon. And Paige comes out to the stage and talks about how she used to represent Mandy and Sonya, but she's traded up now, traded way up. And that Asuka and Kairi are going to rip through the tag team division. And it's going to start next week with Mandy and Sonya. So, again, we still have no idea why Paige is just deciding to do this and endorse these two. None, zero. But I'm going to roll with it. I don't hate them together. It's just give me a reason, anything. I don't care. Tell me that you lost a bet, anything. All right. So Matt Hardy's backstage for an interview, and Matt says it's heartbreaking to have to relinquish the tag titles due to Lars Sullivan's attack, but then tells us that Jeff Hardy's surgery was a success, which was great. R-Truth interrupts. And R-Truth, when I talked about earlier how terrible comedy is in WWE and Vince McMahon's presentation of it, R-Truth is an exception because I think he possesses the natural ability of comedy and timing. And I think that Santino Marella also possessed it. Very few guys do, but I think R-Truth is one of them. Ultimately, Lars Sullivan ends up standing behind R-Truth, and Matt Hardy, you know, puts up his fists like he's the Miz's dad at WrestleMania in an embarrassing fashion. Matt Hardy can't act. I'm sorry, he's in a look. Oh, there goes complaining again. Look at the segment. It's eye rolling from Matt Hardy. I love the Hardy Boys. They are legendary. No question. I love the broken Matt Hardy, the woken Matt Hardy. Anything that Matt Hardy has done inside the ring and promo-wise, in most instances, is done very well. This was not done well. You have Matt Hardy, who is behind R-Truth, where Lars Sullivan is, and he puts up his hands like he's a 13-year-old in high school who's about to have his first fight. It looked embarrassing. It rubbed me really the wrong way. But Lars Sullivan ends up just destroying both men, and the destruction continues for Lars Sullivan, which I'm fine with. The guy hasn't said a word yet, but I don't think he needs to yet. Okay, then we get a pre-tape promo of Aleister Black, which I'm really liking because you know why? We're getting to learn who he is. If you've never seen him in NXT, you are learning who he is. That's what we need. And that's what we need from the Viking experience. That's what we need from any new stars that just come up. Give us something. Kairi Sane. Tell us who you are and why you're here, please. And what's your mission? Three things. Easy. Simple. All right. Kofi Kingston and AJ Styles versus Sami Zayn for the WWE Championship. Very good and lengthy match, as expected. Owens ends up interfering, but Kofi somehow was still able to retain after three Blue Thunder bombs. And I was thinking, Sammy, that's your signature move. You got to hit your finishing move. I think I play wrestling games too much. Signature moves do not finish matches. Finishing maneuvers finish matches. So there's that. So after the match, Kofi helps Woods to his feet at ringside, and Kofi does a brief interview at ringside, saying Kevin Owens is not in his head, but there's going to be hell to pay for Owens at Money in the Bank. So, a very interesting week of Raw. I don't want to say it's a knee-jerk reaction, but I think it's definitely a reaction in part due to the terrible ratings and Fox coming up in just a few months. Well, not a few. October is not a few, but October is 5 months away. But they need to prepare, and they don't want Fox bailing out because their ratings are in the basement. So it's going to be interesting to see how this all plays out. But stay tuned. All right, guys. Well, thank you for joining me on this Wednesday, and I hope you enjoy the rest of your evening, morning, afternoon, whatever you may be doing as you listen to this. I appreciate everybody who takes the time to listen. If you have a moment, please give me a 5-star rating and review on Apple Podcasts. It really, really helps out the show. And if you want an ad-free experience, check out patreon.com/WWE podcast. Ad-free experience and tons of exclusive audio. And every one of my podcasts ad-free for just $1, by the way. $1 for a month of ad-free audio. You want all the ads removed? Check me out there at patreon.com/WWE podcast. Okay, guys. Thank you so much for joining me. I'll be back later this week with a wrestling nostalgia segment, a what-if segment, or maybe even a top five as suggested by some of my listeners. So, as always, guys, thanks so much. I'll talk to you next